This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. We are broadcasting today from a Starbucks. So if you hear a little music in the background, that's compliments of Starbucks Corporation. But I have a young man with me. His name is Michael Harvey. He's one of those young actors that every once in a while I run into who so carries a play that I just had to interview him. Hello, Mike.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. This is fun.
Well, tell us about Little Brother now, which is Griffin Theater's show that is currently running at Athenaeum Theater.
Yes.
So tell us about the play and about your role, because you are not only the star of the play, but you're also the narrator.
Little Brother is a new adaptation of a Cory Doctorow novel, a young adult novel called Little Brother. It is a sci-fi book play set in the near future that depicts Marcus Yallow, a 17-year-old high school student who lives in San Francisco in the Mission. And he and his friends are all very tech-savvy, and they go out one day to play this game, an alternate reality game, or ARG, an ARG. And they just...
Say those a little slow for some of us who aren't so tech.
Right.
But that's one of the great things about the play is that it's so accurate technically, isn't it?
Yeah. Most of the technology in the play exists or is insanely close to existing.
Okay. So now your group is out playing.
So this group of friends, Marcus Van, Holu, and Daryl are out playing this game. They're in the Tenderloin, and they're hunting down a clue, this kind of like real-world tech game. They give you clues. You go out and find them.
Kind of like a treasure hunt?
Exactly. Okay. It's like a real-world techno treasure hunt. So they're out one day, and they happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time when there is a terrorist attack on the Bay Bridge and BART system in San Francisco.
Whoa.
And in the mass confusion, they are picked up by the Department of Homeland Security as suspected enemy combatants or terrorists.
And these are kids that look like high school kids.
These are kids that just happen to have a little extra technology on their phones, a couple safety locks here and there. And then they're put through stress interrogation, which is basically a nice way to say tortured.
Yeah, and mostly psychologically tortured.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And because of this, they're released. They find, you know, the DHS won't admit it, but they find that nothing on these kids. Release them. But Daryl doesn't come out. He's still missing somewhere. And he was injured during the explosion. And this enrages Marcus to the point where he wants to fight back. And he uses his ability to harness technology.
But more than that, he's an idealist, isn't he? He's a freedom advocate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's obsessed with the Constitution, with people's rights, with liberty. And he'll do anything in his power, which happens, we find out, happens to be rather great. But what I love about it is that it's not just this far-fetched technology, like you said. He's using stuff that exists now. He's using an operating system on his Xbox called Paranoid Linux, which is just a version of Linux which exists in the real world. ARGs are games that are played now in the real world. They talk about live-action role-playing and LARPing.
See, I'm not a gamer.
Exactly, but all of these things are real.
But it's the theme of how young people can fight back through technology.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. There was so much of I feel a lot of young people see technology as snooping on them, like sometimes we're being watched by, you know, the internet is logging keystrokes and people are going to steal our information and stuff like that. And I feel like the play and the novel are letting a young audience know that you can use this to your advantage. This stuff is here for you. Don't be afraid of it.
But it's also a cautionary tale against it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Very true.
It's kind of the use of things, yeah.
Yeah.
But your character, he's not only the narrator, but he's the instigator of everything, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, I have to believe that that's not true, but but yeah, you're
Marcus, in terms of fighting back.
In terms of fighting back, sure, yeah, he's the one that... He's the rallying cry for the resistance movement, as it were.
But this is nonviolent, isn't it?
Absolutely nonviolent. What he, like I said, without giving too much away, because hopefully...
No, we want folks to come see the play.
Absolutely. Well, he uses the you know, information he has on hand, his uses his smarts about technology, and instead of physically acting out, they start a dialogue. They get other kids involved by starting this network, this XNet network, that's the DHS can't wiretap. And so they use this underground network to...
Yeah, and he's smart enough to realize that if enough people get on board,
absolutely,
then maybe some change can be made.
Yeah, that young people can change the world, can change the nation when it obviously something's not going right.
So it's a cautionary tale, and it's kind of a blueprint to how to fight back in technology, too, in a couple ways.
It almost literally is a blueprint to fight back, because when the book was written, Cory Doctorow, the author, put up how-tos or instruction manuals, online instruction manuals, about how to make the technology in the book.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, so you can actually go his website, craphound.com, I believe, and they have these videos about how of user-submitted videos of how to make the technology in the book, in the play, things about keeping your liberty, like how to spot pinhole cameras or how to spot, you know, you're being photographed 300 times a day or something like that, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating.
So let's go on now. You have a terrific cast, and a couple of people mm-hmm. I like were the people who played your parents, because what's cool about them is the father is kind of a conservative in a way,
yeah,
where he keeps back in technology. Well, they stopped you for a reason, and so until he gets stopped.
They didn't hurt you, Marcus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the actors who play my parents, Jen and Kevin, or is it Jennifer Lowe and Kevin Gladish, are fantastic. There's this great dynamic with the family. They're obviously, at least at one point, the family was quite liberal. You just get the sense Marcus and his mother are very, very close. But something, when the bombs went off and Marcus went missing, something changed in their dad. In his dad, and he got so angry and so worried that the feeling of wanting to protect what he had lost makes him forget the fact that maybe the way they're going about it isn't right. Yeah. And so now Marcus has this outer real world DHS entity to fight against. But even when he's at home, face to face with his own family, he has this real person who's the reason he's fighting back.
Yeah, and I think he's like the everyman for a lot of parents of that generation.
Yeah,
you know, they want to believe that the government's doing it for the right thing. They don't want to believe that their government is becoming the problem, rather than the one that protects them.
Well, he's the picture of, for some reason, If you need to have more security, you have to have less liberty.
Yeah, but see, I don't believe that.
I don't believe that either.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's
your character certainly doesn't believe.
Absolutely, and I think a lot of people believe that. Once it gets to the point where we have to be more secure, we have to have some of our liberties taken away, and that's just not true.
That's true.
And his father is now, in a way, been brainwashed to believe that. He's been propagandized to believe that.
Yeah, until it starts happening to him.
Yeah.
So tell us about your little Rat Pack, your gang. some terrific
my
young,
gang. Yeah. My gang, yeah.
Young performers in this.
Absolutely. So, like I said, I play Marcus, and then Marcus is second in command. Daryl is played by Darren Myers, another young actor. I believe he just recently graduated. Wonderful. It's a funny guy offstage. Such a great young actor.
Well, it's a good young cast you have here. Yeah.
And then there's Van is played by Denise Lee. And let's see. Then there's Holu, who's played by Jorge Silva. The great thing about our troupe in real life, our ages range all over the board. But we all play 17-year-old high school students and I think look the part, which is so funny to me.
Well, that's good. I mean, believe me, you want to be playing the young parts. You got plenty of time to play the old parts, right?
Well,
Matthew Broderick was almost 40 when he was still playing teenagers.
Well, you know,
didn't hurt.
I'd rather be 50 and playing 20-year-olds. You know.
Yeah, that's true.
I always thought it was when I was younger. I always thought it was such a curse to be like 15 and look like I was 12. But now I'm like, I'm glad that I'm 24 and I look like I'm 17.
Yeah. That does open some doors for you.
But you
have the chops to play older too.
I hope
so. You're not going to play 50.
Oh no.
But you could.
I am getting some gray hairs though. I bet I could. Yeah. Maybe someday. Maybe someday. No, but the gang is fantastic. There's a real playfulness with them on stage that's wonderful. You kind of, you know, mm-hmm. It's wonderful when you look an actor in the eyes and you get that realness, that playfulness on stage.
Yes.
It's not just like I'm going to say my lines at you. There's a real playfulness with us, and they're fantastic and they're great.
Yeah, there is, and it's a testimony that. That's how good Storefront Theater is in Chicago. And
yeah,
Griffin
yeah.
Theater.
There's so much talent there. Yeah. There's so much talent there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And Griffin, you know, Dorothy and Bill.
Tell us about
together.
The director, one of our friends who's been on this
we'll
broadcast.
We'll come back to the cast in just a second. Dorothy Milne is the artistic director at Lifeline in Rogers Park, and she directed Little Brother. And she is fantastic. She is one of my new favorite people.
She is mine too.
She's this.
How is she to
amazing mind? You know.
All right, I don't get a chance to do this. I know she's articulate and uh-huh. and she really can explain, you know, her theater and so forth. How is she as a director?
She's magnificent.
Yeah,
she's magnificent.
You learn things.
Yes, absolutely. Every day, it was so funny. I got cast in this part 2 days before the table read, because this part was originally cast by someone else, and that person got offered something at Steppenwolf. So, as you do, you go to Steppenwolf. And so then I was lucky enough to have my name mentioned, and I got an audition, and I came in, and then 2 days later, boom, at the table read. And through the process of rehearsal, Dorothy and I got to a point where. By the end, she would say, Mike, I have this idea. And I would go, I know exactly what you're going to say. And she wouldn't have to finish the thought.
That's good. That's
and I would
in sync.
It was insane.
Let me give you a parallel to that. I was talking a few days ago to William Polinsky, the famous director from Candlelight, who entered theater at the center. And he was talking about one of his leading ladies. It was the same way, because I said, you've done a lot of shows with this one lady. He says, yeah. And he says, she finishes my sentence. Or if I point somewhere, she'll know exactly where to go. And he says, when you get that, he says, you know you're going to have a good show.
Oh, man. By the end, it was a little I would laugh about it every day. It was getting a little creepy, because she wouldn't even have to. I was like, she would send me notes, like email me notes. And she's such an artistic mind that she'll admit she wouldn't be able to word correctly what she was trying to get across. Mm-hmm. And she didn't have to, because I know exactly what she's talking about.
Good. People don't understand. That's what really makes art.
This connection, this communication, this collaboration. And then Bill Messalia, who adapted the play and is the artistic director at Griffin, again, one of my new favorite people. He's fantastic.
Yeah, Bill's very bright guy.
Oh, he's so, you know, and he's so smart, and he understands, or he understands this how to get across this teen culture feel. While he was adapting, because, you know, he's there in rehearsals and morphing the play as we go, and he just got it, which was fantastic. And then I do have to mention Erica Foster, our stage manager. The three of them during this play, I would never have gotten this down if it weren't for them spending so much time with me.
Thank you for saying something about stage managers. We don't talk about them enough. How important they are.
Amazing. I mean, she's no nonsense. In the most amazing way possible. She's fantastic. I can't say enough about her. Three of them together have made this play possible for me, so I have to thank them.
All the major scene changes and things must be
going
on backstage.
There's a million cues in this show. So much tech.
Yeah.
So they are absolutely fantastic.
So she keeps it all in
order.
Oh, man.
She doesn't mess around.
Folks, you wonder what's going on backstage. There's somebody directing traffic and making sure everybody's where they're supposed to be.
It's hopefully someone like Erica.
Yeah.
It's hopefully someone like Erica. That,
you're going to make a friend there. And she did do a terrific job.
Always make friends with your stage manager. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
Make friends with your stage manager.
So what you haven't mentioned, and let me tee it up, is how what a great job you did anchoring the show. not only did you play the Marcus part well, but you could step out of the character and be a narrator. And when it's over, and it's so important in these kind of shows with a narrator that we buy you and we empathize with you right away. Because if we don't care, one will either hate you or love you, the show doesn't go anywhere. And from the beginning, you come out with that sparkle and that charm. And I must add, your enunciation, which is my pet peeve, and I'm sure people have read my reviews know that. Sometimes young actors talk too fast and they mumble their words real quick.
They get excited.
Yeah, I call it cell phone talk. It's like they run 20 words together. And there are a number of actors in town who do that, and it just turns, you don't know what they're saying, so you turn it off. A couple of sentences, and you've turned the play off.
Well,
but you came out so clear, so succinct, yet you were talking quicker. But it isn't a matter of speed. It's a matter of if you have the diction and the pronunciation, we get it.
Yeah.
So you were in the style of your generation, but you're understandable.
There's a drive that the show requires.
Yeah.
That I got. Well, believe me, I got notes on it during rehearsals that I was talking too fast, and it's just that confusion of the drive of the show versus just speed and talking too fast.
Yeah, and enunciation. Making sure that you...
So you heard everything.
Yes.
You heard all the words. That's important, because if you miss one piece of information...
But you had the emphasis in the right places, which helps. Sometimes if they do it in a monologue, blah, 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 you know, in a monologue like that, then it's like, what was that and what was important about it?
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting... Yeah, that was something from day one. Like, again, like I said, at the table read, I didn't have a chance to read the book yet. I'd only read the sides from the audition.
Wow.
And I showed up for the table read, and we started. And the first version of the script was basically a play form of the book. It had pretty much everything in it.
Okay.
Because that's where he started with the adaptation and then turned it into a play from there. And I'm sitting there reading this thing, and I would turn a page, and people started laughing at me because I would turn a page and go, oh, my God, there's more of me.
Yeah. Yeah, you had some good speeches.
So much stuff to remember, and I was starting to get a little – I was like, oh, this is so long. Because the original version, like I said, was just basically the novel in play form. It was like 3 hours long. The table read was like 3 hours, and I was kind of freaking out. But, you know, Bill made it very clear, like, this is not the final version. Don't worry. So that was something that was in the forefront of our minds while we did this, was that you have to be able to be in the show, be in the play, in the universe of the play, be real with people, and then step out and narrate. And one of the original takes on it for me was that when Marcus was talking to the audience, he was completely removed from what was going on behind him, as if it was a true other character, a narrator, like 2 months
right.
after.
You walked up to your spot,
happened.
And the way the lighting went. So not only did you give that impression to us as an audience, but you yourself, you physically moved out of the place.
Yeah, and well, it became a little different by the end, because I found there's so many ups and downs with Marcus in this play that it became impossible to completely leave behind everything that was going
on. Yeah, right, as it moves
on. And so it became this kind of... If he was in that moment, maybe slightly removed, and had the forethought to articulate correctly at that moment,
what would he have said? But you bought it. We bought you. So as you took us on this journey, it was okay to do that because we were right with you.
Yeah, and it's such a like actor's kind of dream, you know? Like you get to. Someone said it. Someone told me it was like the new version of Ferris Bueller's Day Off, but with terrorists.
I guess I could see that. Yeah.
You know, you're in the play, and then it comes out, and you introduce the characters to the audience while they're doing stuff behind you and stuff.
And it probably was to your advantage that you didn't know what you were getting into. You kind of this is like kind of walking by a pool, and they shoved you in, and you had to swim to the other end. I mean,
I bet.
You had like no notice, right?
I didn't know. I had no idea what it was about or what was going on. And I actually, that first day, we would go around the table, and everyone introduced themselves, and it dawned on me as we're going around that no one actually told me what part I was playing. It just simply was not mentioned in emails and phone calls. So I showed up, and they were like, who are you and who are you playing? And I was like, I'm Mike Harvey, and I'm playing Marcus? And everyone kind of laughed at me. Embarrassing, but
so obviously you were up to the challenge.
I hope so. I mean, it was a lot of work. It was a lot of hard work. The entire cast, the crew, Alan, our stage designer, our set builder, they built this amazing moving set, but still very, you know, like utilitarian and stark. And
yeah.
Anyway, everyone worked so, so hard on this, and the tech was really long and hard because there's so much tech to it.
Yeah, there is.
And when we finally turned around that opening night, and I have the luxury of watching everyone's performance every night because I don't leave the stage. I mean, I'm off stage for 5 seconds, then I come right back on.
Yeah.
So I have that privilege of seeing everyone's performance every night. And opening night, there was this leap, and this amazing thing happened, and everyone did. I was just so proud. They did this amazing work, and I was like, this show. I was already proud of the show, but I was like, this show deserves to be seen. These people were, you know, they worked so hard, and I'm so proud of them. You know, I just haven't had that feeling in a play, after you know, finishing a play before.
Well, I saw it the next week after you opened, and it still had that kind of energy.
Good,
yeah.
good. I'm so glad.
It sure did. And the hardest thing is maintaining it every night, right?
Yeah.
This is an ambitious play.
Yeah, there's a great. I mean, we try to make a point to hang out on the stage and sing to each other and be ridiculous and stretch out together and come together as a cast, because if it weren't for them, I mean, they support me during the show. There are prop handoffs, there are costume changes, quick changes backstage. And if I didn't have the support of this amazing cast, I would not be as good as I come off to the audience.
So time for a little commercial for the show.
Okay.
Tell us stage you're playing, where it's playing, and so forth.
Okay. I don't want to get anything wrong.
See, a typical actor. He's not sure of of when it closes or whatever.
Oh, I know when it closes. Fine, I won't even look at my notes.
Okay,
we run Thursdays through Sundays. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Our shows are at 7:30.
Okay.
Tickets are $25, I believe, at the Athenaeum, which is on North Southport.
Right, 2936 North Southport.
2936, yeah, you're good. You don't even have your notes out.
Been there a few times.
Just a couple, right?
Yeah.
Sundays are matinees at 3, and we run through. We do not have a performance tonight, but I guess no one's going to hear this for a while.
No, they're not going to hear this till Monday.
Monday, okay, so never mind.
Okay.
And we do not have a performance on July 4th, so no pressure there. Go enjoy the fireworks.
What does your run? How long does it
run? We go through July 19th.
July 19th.
Close on the Sunday, July 19th.
I heard that you were telling me that possibly the playwright may come in town.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
Before we get to that, I just wanted to say real quick, I can't not mention Sadie Rogers.
Oh, yes. She's one of my favorites. Yeah.
Isn't she fantastic?
Yes.
She plays Marcus's love interest, Ange Carvelli. And she's just probably one of the most hilarious, ridiculous, funny, wonderful people I've ever met.
And she's got that look.
Amazing
she
job.
She plays a lot of these kind of quirky characters in the shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not far removed from her in real life. Let's just, you know.
Okay.
No, I just have to mention her because she was there from day one at my audition. I read with her.
Okay.
And she's just been wonderful. And I'm starting to think that she's a Jeff recommendation, a good luck charm, because she was just in The Rocks, got a Jeff nod. She was in Mariette before that, got a Jeff nod,
right.
I believe, and now this one got a Jeff nod, and she's
And let me tell you, that's not
fantastic.
The easiest thing in non-equity storefront theater.
Yeah.
This is it's really an honor.
She's wonderful.
I think a lot of that has to do with your performance, too. I think it's an ensemble piece, but...
I do. I think it's an ensemble piece.
You're being humble, but I really think you... It's hard when you are the main character and you're the narrator, when you're sort of the anchor of a show. Because if people don't buy your performance, the show goes nowhere. It's the way this one's designed.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I truly believe it's such an ensemble piece. I'm so proud of everyone.
So now tell us when the playwright made it.
Cory Doctorow, this hilarious, intelligent man. I was telling you before, I've read so much about him since this. Oh, and I learned all this stuff about him. He, born in Canada, now lives in England. He writes for a blog site called boingboing.com, and he wrote on his blog about Little Brother being turned into a play, and said he was very excited and all that. And then at the end he put, and I've wrangled a trip to Chicago to come see it on July 9th.
Terrific.
And he said, I would love for you all, meaning his blog audience, to come meet him there.
Terrific.
So if anybody knows Cory Doctorow or cares to meet him already. I'm excited about it.
They better get a ticket soon. That's not that far away.
Not at all. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it because I'd love to meet him. I'm excited about it. Yeah, how cool is that?
Yeah.
He's going to fly all the way from England to come see his book as a play.
Well, you know.
And he just sold the rights to a director for the to a producer for a possible movie of Little Brother as well.
Well, better take him out to dinner.
Yeah. Well, that's what I tell people. I'm like, this is how it works, right? You get cast in the show. You do the run. It gets picked up for a national tour. And then you get to do the movie. Like, that's right? Isn't that how it works?
In dreamland,
right?
Unfortunately, what happens, but yet you could be an exception.
I'm just making jokes. I know.
Sometimes what they do is, unfortunately, is they have to cast quote big names, and sometimes
I'm sure they,
and
know,
sometimes
I'm sure
that
they would.
Sometimes that bombs. You know what I mean? That they get so worried, particularly when they take shows to Broadway. They do that, but on film they do that too.
I can think of a handful of actors that should be Marcus before me.
Yeah.
That Shia LaBeouf kid would kill it. The one from all the Transformer movies.
Oh, I'd say I don't
know.
You
see those? Okay. Sorry. Yeah. That's my cup of tea.
Okay. But you never know, right?
Yeah.
Stranger
now,
things
I'm just looking forward to meeting him.
Yeah, that would be cool. Okay. In a few minutes we have left, let's talk about your background, because all of a sudden, you've done other plays here. It's the first time I've seen you in a play, and first time, like a lot of people in the Jeff Committee, have seen you in anything. So tell us your background.
Well, I was born and raised in Urbana, Illinois, which is Urbana-Champaign, Twin Cities. It's where the University of Illinois is.
Where'd you go to? Did you go to school there?
I did. I went Urbana High School, Urbana Middle School, Urbana High School, Thomas Paine Elementary, for anyone out there who knows it. I did my very first show in my freshman year of high school. We did Truman Capote's Holiday Memories, and I got cast as Little Truman. And everyone tells the story the first time they were on stage, and you get that first laugh, and you go, "Oh, this is it." And it was kind of like that. I was like, "Oh, okay, this is cool."
Yeah.
And I got through high school, and they start telling you, "You have to pick a career. You have to pick something you're going to do in college. You have to. You have to. You have to." And I was like, "Well, I don't know how to do anything else." Right. And that's kind of how it started. I was like, I don't know how to do anything else. People kept telling me I was good at it, so I thought this is what I should do. Anyway, I go to college at Parkland College, the community college in Champaign. And that's like a 2-year degree that took me like 4.5, I think.
Go on.
While I was there, I worked with some great people. And then I took some time off, lived there. And while I was in Champaign, a man by the name of Mark Roberts, who writes and produces 2.5 Men, grew up in Urbana. And he would come back and do his original plays at the Station Theater there. And I got to know him. And while we were there, we became good pals. And I told him, I was like, I want to move to Chicago. Like, I want to take a shot at this. And he encouraged me to do that. And so I moved up here to Chicago in August of last year. But before I moved up, one of the people who used to work at the station, Jared Dapier, got a hold of me, and he said he was doing a play at the Side Project in Rogers Park, and said, "Would you like to do it?" And I said, "Well, I don't live in Chicago." And he goes, "Well, you want to just audition for me and see what happens?" So I drove up. I lost a job in the process. I was working at an American Eagle, and I lost the job to come up for the audition, and I got the part. So
it worked out.
So I took it.
Sure.
I took the job, and I was waiting tables down in Champaign 4 days a week. And then I would drive up and sleep in my dad's basement in Des Plaines and then drive in for rehearsals 3 days a week and then drive back down and work. And then when the show opened, I switched and did 4 days up here for performances and 3 days working doubles down in Champaign, trying to make enough gas money to get back and forth.
That's a great story.
I did that.
But I won't say it's typical, but I've heard other stories.
Yeah. It was amazing at the time. I look back on it now and I'm like, what was I thinking?
But yet, that's great. You weren't thinking. You were just going after your dream.
I still am. I was so serious about it. So I did that, and then I stayed down there for a little while. And then just last August, I moved up here to Edgewater. And because I had done Thief River there, Adam Webster, the artistic director at Side Project, I sent him an email and said, "Hey, do you remember me? I'm in town." And he said, "We have auditions tomorrow. Show up." And I came, and I got cast in 3 pieces of their Cut to the Quick Festival there.
Okay.
And did those 3, and those went over well. Then The next thing I did was the next installment of that festival. Did one thing for that, a piece called Stunt, written by Chelsea Markentel, who's a local playwright. And then I got Little Brother, and that is my Chicago play history.
So you're glad you're here.
I'm very excited. I love the city. Yeah. I love Chicago.
And, you know, it's such a I've heard this story before. We're such a mecca for young talent. People are coming here, not going to New York because it just isn't a lot of work. In fact, the Equity actors in New York are all trying to come here.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons we're holding up and they're not is we have subscription bases in a lot of our theater. So people buy the whole year, which helps. And that we have a work ethic of the actors here. You know, one, you're the star of this show. Next show, you're going to probably be the ensemble. You know, I always tell people, well, star of one show, next show, you're holding the spear.
Absolutely.
But it's all about the work.
And absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'm just excited and happy to be cast in things, simply to be working, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just,
well, you're following your dream. So, last question.
Yes.
What do you want to be doing? Tell me where you're going to be 5 years from now.
Oh, geez.
I mean, what kind of shows do you want to do? Or
You know, having grown up in the state and visiting Chicago so much, I have a great affinity for Steppenwolf.
Okay.
And I would love to work with Steppenwolf.
Get a hold of Erica Daniels. And
Erica, if you're listening, give me a call. But I've also, Mark Roberts, who I mentioned, did a film in Tolono, Illinois that he wrote. And I was in that, and I just did a small part in Stephen Cohn's In Memoriam, which just wrapped here in the city. And I'd like to do more of that. I'm really interested film work. It seems like such an interesting medium that I know less about than theater. So
but
I'd
you
love
know,
to do more than that.
Stage actors make terrific film actors because they know how to get
there.
Oh, yeah. It's a different form.
It is.
But some of the great stars can't learn lines and things because that's all, you know, they never worked on stage and had to
never
learn
had to,
what you had to
they
learn.
They never had to memorize 100 pages of dialogue.
That's right. But so that this is great training for any casting director will tell you that, that this is learning craft, that it's, I won't say easier, it's different, but you can build on, it's harder. Stage people have film actors have a hell of a time trying to go on stage if they've never done it.
Mm-hmm.
But stage actors and film is relatively easy. So you're learning the hardest part
I'm
now.
I'm learning the hardest. Well, good. My mom always told me I did things the hard way. Yeah. So,
but that's fun. So the show runs until middle
July
of July
19th.
You're actively 19th. Out auditioning, correct?
I am. I have an audition next week.
Great. Well, thanks for giving us a terrific show.
Thanks so much for having me on.
And folks, remember, thanks for listening, and go see a play this week.